This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free, and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot, so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful-looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Programmatic media buying and selling for the digital out-of-home marketplace has been going on for many years now and grown a lot more sophisticated and a lot more used. Just as the digital out-of-home business has matured and expanded in the last few years, so have some of its key players, notably New York City-based Vistar Media, which has been at it now for 8 years and is seeing crazy good growth these days. I spoke with co-founder Michael Provenzano about the online roots of his business and how he took much of the same approach into a media and supporting tech business that was, at the start, kind of all over the place. We had a great chat talking about what Vistar does, why it built its own CMS, the roles these days of data, and whether programmatic is the answer for media-based digital signage networks or part of the answer. Mike, thanks for joining me. Can you give me the elevator pitch for what Vistar is all about?
Yeah, of course. And thanks again for having me on the show. Vistar is a software company that works with both buyers and sellers of out-of-home media. So on the buy side, we work typically with ad agencies to help them provide a data-driven, automated, and measurable strategy in the way that they execute out-of-home transactions. And on the sell side, we work with media owners on powering their screen software all the way to revenue management across multiple demand sources. So that could be their direct sales, local sales, as well as programmatic sales.
Now, I have tried desperately to wrap my arms and my brain around programmatic and understand the difference between demand side and supply side. And what you just told me suggests that you're both. Or am I just stupid?
Yeah, no, you're right.
Well, I am stupid.
You're not stupid. You're absolutely right. We do sit on both sides of an ecosystem. Not all programmatic software providers do that. There's some who focus one on buy side or sell side. We do sit on both.
And why was that?
Originally, it was out of necessity, actually. When we entered the space, we had realized that there was a good amount of unsold inventory in out-of-home media, and that there was a gap between the understanding of why buyers should buy it versus what was being pitched. And so we spent a lot of time working with marketers to help them understand why out-of-home was such a valuable medium for them to be increasing their investment on. And really, to do that heavy lifting, we needed to build out a sales team. And so although getting all the supply on a platform is valuable, we still needed demand to be there for, one, the supply to be on board and wanting to stay on board, as well as for the buyers, we needed to have enough supply for them to care about logging in. So because it was such an immature marketplace, we really did have to build both and catalyze the demand for programmatic out of home.
Yeah, now you've been around, I think, 8 years. And the digital out-of-home marketplace is a very different place than it was 8 years ago. I would imagine you're happy that it's matured to the level it has now, because it would have been fairly quiet in 2001 or 2011, pardon me.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, we were just doing a company update last week, and I was telling a lot of the people who have only been here for about a year that, you know, It's shocking to me, after being here doing it for 8 years, how different and how big the opportunity is in the space. I mean, when we entered, we thought, great, you know, I think we can get this going. There's going to be some interest, but where we've landed today, I mean, through consultants and our general understanding of the space, in the U.S. market alone, the programmatic out-of-home spend is around $120 million this year. And so it's really exciting to see that kind of growth. And our business as a whole grows a little bit over 60% year over year. So as you can imagine, it's been very healthy, and we've been very excited about it. If we can continue that growth rate, and hopefully some of our competitors continue a rapid growth rate as well, we can find ourselves in a very healthy ecosystem for all the companies involved.
Mm-hmm. And how do you make money? Is it kind of akin to a Ticketmaster fee for a transaction?
Yeah, very similar. And this is pretty common in online advertising. Essentially, you take a percentage of the transaction that's going through the platform. So it's really giving people a login to a trading interface, right? It's almost like if you were trading stocks on Scottrade or E-Trade, right? You're logging in and, you know, they're going to take a cut of that transaction.
Okay. Now, this grew out of a company that you ultimately sold to Google called Invite Media. When did that one start?
Yeah, Invite Media was one of the first DSPs in the online advertising space. We were focused on banner ads primarily at that time. And, you know, the idea was pretty straightforward for Vistar, which was, if programmatic advertising was going to become the standard across all digital channels, then TV, radio, or out of home all had to go down this kind of automated, measurable, data-driven path at some point as well. We took a lot of our learnings from that business, and it was a short company. It was only around for 3 years, and we were fortunate enough that Google was on the market to find a DSP at the time, and we said, you know, we're in, we'll sign up for that. And, we at this point have taken those blueprints and said, well, I think we can do a pretty good job. It's not going to be a perfect apples to apples comparison, but I think we do a pretty good job of taking some of the good things about online programmatic and bring them into out of home.
Is it pretty similar, or are there very clear distinctions between out of home and online for programmatic?
A lot of the basic stuff's there. As you can imagine, targeting is pretty much the same, where it's like you can target based on geography. You can target based on context, right? Like online, you say, I want to advertise on a fashion website, or versus, you know, an out of home, you might say, I want to advertise in a mall. I want to advertise in a office building, right? So there's similar targeting parameters that you could imagine that work out really well. Some of the things that are just a mismatch are the one-to-many impression issue, you know, the one-to-many eyeballs. In online, everything's one-to-one, very trackable, very clean. That's one thing that is a big education note for a lot of our partners. There's also a disconnect on the measurement side, right? And a lot of online advertising is direct response oriented, you know, cost per an install type of campaigns in mobile where, you know, people click and download and that they only get paid if they can get someone to install an app. That doesn't exist in out of home, right? So for certain types of marketers, there's a big gap in increasing out of home investment without understanding that ROI piece further.
Mm-hmm. When the first attempts at kind of rolling up and creating an aggregate of companies that sold out-of-home media avails, you had companies like Seesaw Networks and AdCentricity who were putting something together. And I remember at the time, this is going back to, you know, like 10 plus years ago, they were saying that one of the biggest challenges is the widely varied quality and operational reliability of all the various networks out there. Some were rock solid, some you never really knew if screens were even on. Has that improved?
It's definitely improved quite a bit. When we started Vistar, I had reached out to actually all the people who ran those companies. Some were still running and some were, shutting down or already shut down. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the first kind of research exercises we did before building the business was, okay, well, you know, this is a pretty logical thing. I'm sure we're not the first people to think about it. Well, why hasn't it worked before? And I think there's a variety of reasons why it didn't work before and why it was potentially too early. But the reliability of networks was a really big thing. I remember when we first built our kind of API for companies to say, hey, you know, I'm a screen over here, give me an ad. When we were building that out, I remember having countless conversations with engineers at different suppliers, and they'd say, wait a minute, you want me to tell you every time I played an ad? I was like, I'm used to I get an ad creative and I keep showing it and looping it on a screen over and over again as much as I want. And I was like, well, no. And online, and particularly in the way that most accountable marketers want to spend their money, they need to know that every transaction is happening when it's supposed to happen, you know, fully transparent. This is how a transaction is occurring. And so there was a big just gap in people's minds. Again, this was 8 years ago, of basically making the medium transactional, actually treating showing an ad on a screen one time as a financial transaction. That was a very, very, not complex. I don't think it's a complex concept at all, but I think it was a very foreign concept to a lot of our partners in the early days. And so it took a lot of education of why that was the new requirement. Today, that's not a problem at all. And I think, you know, we helped, you know, set that standard 8 years ago and continue to keep people on pretty strict guidelines around what it means to be integrated with Vistar. It's not simple. It's not easy. It does take time. It takes work, but the quality is the same across all networks when a buyer is working with us. And so we want to make sure we always have had that. And, you know, what's good is we've set that standard. And now as other programmatic companies have come in the space over the last year or two, you know, they get to benefit from that, right? There's this opportunity where it is now a much easier world to get into trying to access a media owner's inventory than it ever has been.
Mm-hmm. And when you say partners, are you talking about media owners or the software companies like the BroadSigns and so on that are, you know, helping kind of execute this stuff?
Yeah, I apologize. Partners is definitely a vague word in general. Usually I'm referring to in that case, I was referring to the media owners. So yeah, the people owning the supply.
Right. Okay. You do a range of services as well. It's not just the DSP and SSP. What all does Vistar do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the simplest way to think about it is we have two sets of customers, right? The buyers and the sellers. Mm-hmm. So to a buyer, we offer them a variety of ways to execute out-of-home transactions. So not only do we provide them this DSP where they can have access to all this different inventory and transact into multiple transaction types, including an open exchange and private marketplaces, but we also provide them a data management platform. So a lot of out-of-home around targeting and around measurement ties back to people's ability to leverage location data, typically GPS data that's aggregate and anonymous from applications. And so we actually process terabytes of this data, of movement data, essentially, about consumers. And we ask business questions of it. So, you know, we might want to know where people who go to Home Depot twice a month on Saturdays, you know, how do those people generally move around in their commutes day to day so that, you know, Lowe's can maybe retarget that customer and try to reach that competitive set and convert them to becoming a Lowe's customer. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot with processing that data. We work with a variety of data providers to help us better define an audience. We've learned that a lot of marketers from the online space have their own data sets. They have certain third parties they like working with. So we've built an entire data marketplace of third parties, leveraging Vistar's technology and taking that all those online data sets into out-of-home media. And so now those marketers can use the same targeting that they're using online, and they can use it in out-of-home. So not only do we help them target the right screens, the right place, the right time, but we're also then transacting through the programmatic pipe, right? And then we're using that same location data and sales data as well, store visitation data to tie back to some of the KPIs that these brands care about. So if I'm a big box retailer, I care about foot traffic into my store. If I'm a CPG client, I care about the increase in scale and sales of a certain SKU item, right? So for our marketers, we offer all of those services. And in some cases, our clients are what we call self-service. So they log into our platform and do all the things I just described. In some cases, our clients are managed service, meaning we have a client services team that's making those decisions for them and helping them run our platform on their behalf.
You would imagine that in a lot of cases, particularly when it gets to retail, that they don't have people who could do that internally. They may have 10,000 employees, but 100 of them actually work in head office. So is that the case where you're doing a lot of the managed services?
Well, it's interesting. You know, basically all we work primarily with national brands, right? So the national brands all have large ad agencies that they're running on. So majority of our clients on the buy side of our business, 95% are large ad agencies. So these agencies are well-staffed. They've got a lot of people trained in programmatic buying across multiple platforms. And so we then provide these traders a platform to transact out of home in a very similar way. So that's where you know, the self-service kind of managed fits. And on the supply side of our business, so we work with media owners and we provide them a few pieces of software. One, we have a piece of software we call Cortex, which is very similar to a CMS software that's probably common in the digital signage space. We took a little bit of a different approach with it. It's less content focused. It's actually primarily around device management and application deployment. So it's really for people who are running large signage networks and need to handle those devices at scale and handle multi-version deployments and a lot of complexities in the way that they run their network. And along with that is this kind of revenue management system or this ad platform. And this ad platform does a variety of things for a media owner. It can manage all of their inventory, very similar to a hotel or airline booking system. It tells you kind of how many seats you have available on your flight. Well, how much time do I have on my screens throughout the day? It's a very robust system for managing yield. And it will automatically deliver the right ads, the right screens, the right time on your direct sales. It will also automatically plug into the SSP, right, and pull in all those programmatic dollars from Open Exchange and PMP, provides people with, you know, creative approval. It's really big and out of home. You asked about one of the differences between online and offline. Well, that's a huge one where you can't just show any ad on these screens. These are public screens. So we give media owners a lot of tools around control of what's on the screen, what's the price, and the transparency that they provide to buyers. So we provide all those tools, the software tools, to our suppliers. One thing that's very different about our supply side business than our demand business is we don't operate a network for anyone, right? We are purely software when it comes to the supply side of the business, and we give them all the tools they need to run those signage networks.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
When you developed Cortex, this would have been at a time when there was still hundreds of CMS options out there. Yeah. So it's not like you looked around and decided, somebody needs to build a tool to play out content here. Why did you decide you had to do your own?
Well, that for two reasons, actually. The first was when we were doing our integrations with media owners, we realized that the reliability, to your point around Cecil and some of the others early on, was very low. So we would be running campaigns for our buyers, and then we would see when you're running campaign, you're pacing it, basically. You have time and then spend, and you're trying to evenly spend money day over day during a campaign's flight. And we would be trying to spend money and we'd see things are pacing behind, which was crazy to us because there was at the time basically infinite supply and a shortage of demand. So why can't we spend this money? And so we'd call a network and we'd say, we had all this monitoring system set up for all of our media owners of basically watching their screens. And we'd say, hey, you know, we call, you know, one of our partners and say, hey, media owner, you know, we're trying to deliver some campaigns and we noticed, we think one of your screens is down. And the response would be, oh yeah, you're right. And it's like, well, that's not my job. You know, I'm the ad guy. I'm not supposed to tell you about your network uptime. And it became apparent that even some of the, you know, the systems that have been around for a long time just really didn't have great pieces of software. And it also became evident quickly that the service around those software platforms wasn't very strong either. In addition to that, there wasn't a clear consolidation in the market. So there wasn't someone who was just so far ahead of everyone else. And we knew that because we had integrated with, I mean, to date, we're probably integrated with 55 different CMS systems. It's crazy. Wow. That we've had to do that over the years. But that to us said, well, there's not a consolidated player here. And if there's this much fragmentation and a lot of the software, there are some players who build very nice software, by the way, but a lot of the players are not building high quality software. And we have a very specific need around quality and uptime when it comes to advertising. And for ad-based networks, I think we can just build a better solution.
Mm-hmm. So in a lot of respects, it was almost like a defensive maneuver to stop the madness and say, hey, guys, let's just run it on here with the rest of our product suite.
Yeah, and it just saves us time. So, you know, we have two really sets of clients on the supply side. You have networks who have been around forever, right? Big networks that have a legacy sales force. They have legacy CMS, either built in-house or third party. And for those guys, it's a much longer sales cycle, right? To move them off of what they're on today onto Cortex, right? It's a long sales cycle, and it's a big change, and it's a surgical change to their business. So those things take, you know, a year, 2 years to sell those in. However, in our newer network business, there's a lot of new networks coming out more than ever. This last year, I would say that we've seen so many newer networks pop up that are ad supported or networks that have been around for a while who want to now become ad supported. And that's been an amazing opportunity for us because these aren't people who really care about their signage software. You know, they don't think about they don't preconceive notions about it or what it should do or could do. They have a very simple ask. I want to get into advertising and make money. Is this my best option? Is this the biggest bang for the buck? Am I going to be a profit center to you or a cost center? That's really the question that most of these companies are asking today. And it's been really powerful for Vistar because we can walk in the door and say, we will be a profit center to you day one.
And one of the things that, you know, I have a long history in digital out of home. I started a network in 2004.
Yeah.
Which is way, 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 way too early. And my understanding of these kinds of ad exchanges and so on, in the early years, you really needed to position in your head of this is going to be extra money for me, but I'm going to need direct ad sales for this network to thrive and for me to have a workable business. Can you now run an out-of-home media network purely on a programmatic basis and make money?
That's actually a great question. I'll tear it apart in a few ways. So one, whether it's all programmatic or not, and again, the word programmatic can mean a thousand things, I think, to people. But
yes.
I would say one thing we tell all media owners is you absolutely should have your own direct sales effort. And whether that's three people scattered across the major markets or whether in the U.S., let's say, or it's two sellers scattered across two of the major advertising markets in Canada, let's say, we always recommend having a face, a body that you can have at events, that you can educate buyers on. You always have to have that. The demand for out of home is not, you know, bleeding over where it's at the point where you just put up screen and then, you know, money flows in. So we always recommend a sales effort. Now, if that sales team only sold their ads in a programmatic nature, great. You know, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But we always recommend media owners to have a sales team even today. And I don't see that going away personally. As much of a tech guy I am, I think sales has extreme value, especially when you're trying to do large partnerships and sponsorships with endemic brands to your network. It just is a no-brainer to me to have a sales team.
Mm-hmm.
And the economics work out really well.
Why do you think it's bubbling up now that there are so many more emerging networks? I know you said some of them are networks that now decided they want media revenue, but then you've got all these guys like Firefly who are putting screens on top of Ubers and everything else that's coming out of the weeds.
Yeah, look, I think there's a few reasons. One, costs are low. I think there's that general idea. I mean, if you recall when you put up your network in 04, the cost for a screen was what at the time? I mean, a few thousand dollars?
Just a bit higher.
Yeah, right?
Oh, a 30-inch NEC was $10,000.
Jeez, yeah. I mean, geez, like today that's, you know, it's fractions off of that. So
it's free.
Yeah, in some cases, yeah, right? So it's a big gap in terms of the cost to get the CapEx, essentially, to get these networks started. So that lowers the barrier to entry, one. Two, I think economic. We are in a time where private funding is at a pretty big high right now.
There's money around.
There's a lot, yeah. So, I mean, you can go to VC, you can go to some angels, and you can get a network up and running pretty fast. And even there's a lot of opportunity if you can prove some decent profitability early on, you probably can go get some debt out and play around with debt for some of that CapEx too, play those games. So I just think it's a very nice ecosystem for getting going. And, you know, I think Vistar helps with that as well, right? There is that confidence that, yeah, you're going to be building your sales team from scratch, but at the same time, you know, day one, we can help you with some incremental revenue just to get going. So it's not like it's an empty screen for your first 6 months until your salespeople are ramped up. You know, you've got Fortune 1000 brands that are showing up on your screen day one. So I think that all those things together help make it a little easier.
How important is data to validate the network and to get the sale? I mean, if you are operating just on gross audience counts that, yeah, we think 100,000 people see this every month, will that still sell?
You know, we've had to kind of self-regulate that, to be honest. At some point, like any other business, we like making money, but at the same time, quality is a big thing. We've worked very hard to maintain a very high quality marketplace. And some of that's subjective, right? It's just like, I don't think this is a screen people like, and I don't think our marketers will care about this. And we've had those tough conversations with potential partners, and other times it's exactly what you're describing. So it's like, hey, are you, you know, in the US, are you audited by Geopath? In Canada, are you audited by Comb? Like, do you have some numbers? And if you don't, you know, what's your plan? Are you going to invest in that in the first 6 months, or is this something that just not even on your radar? Or are you going to go all out, you know, and are you going to put a computer vision solution on the screen and actually track, you know, real numbers? Like, all that's great, but we do require an answer to the question, right? And a game plan for moving forward these days, because it's just, it has such a negative effect on the market when you have these high quality networks that have invested significantly in essentially impression data. And then you can't just let anyone else on the platform who hasn't even reached that base level of investment.
Right. When it comes to computer vision, certainly you get a sense of impressions and views and how long people look at the screen. It seems like the next wave that's been talked about for a long time, but at least sounds like it's happening now, is a shift to real-time ad serving based on what computer vision is telling you about the audience.
You know, I think there's, you know, the Minority Report kind of science fiction thought process around it. Mm-hmm. I think the scariest part with a lot of that is the privacy element of it. You know, we expanded into the UK just about a year and a half ago, and we had to spend a lot of time with GDPR and privacy. And we think about it as much as possible as, you know, working with anonymous data. And the thing that really matters to marketers is really the conversation around, you know, breaking habits of consumers. People are pretty boring. They do the same thing at least 5 days a week, if not more. And it's those habits that marketers are really trying to understand. And, you know, you're buying a competitive product, or, you know, over time you've been searching for them, you're looking for something, and you're on your way to buy it. Those are the things that are probably the most interesting, and those are really looking back at data over time, right? It's looking at statistics. Mm-hmm. That's taking the time to say, all right, over the last month, this is your behavior. Therefore, we can accurately predict going into the following days. We find that that's really what marketers are asking for. So it's less about, let me make a real-time decision off of what's happening here, because the data is not real-time, so the transaction being real-time is not that important to us.
Yeah, and I always wonder when you've got, you know, in a public place like, let's say, Penn Station, where you have thousands of people teaming through there, and yes, there are screens with computer vision looking at the audience, and yes, it can identify there's there's somebody in his 50s, male in his 50s, serve this ad, but there's also a couple of women standing there or somebody else walking by, and there's latency and everything else. Does it even really work?
I don't think it's worth the time. I mean, I think technologically you can get there, right? Like we're pretty technical society these days. Like you can have some, you know, low millisecond response times and make this all happen. I just don't think. There's definitely not a need for it on the marketing side. They're not asking for it. Buyers aren't asking for it. And to your point, it's a one-to-many medium. I mean, you know, taking our invite experience and saying, let's move everything into an online world. Everything's one-to-one. It's like, well, that's not reality. It's not that. So not everything's going to be a perfect fit when you're bringing some online ad tech into at home. So I think the computer vision software is very interesting from collecting high quality stats about an area. So you can get some really amazing granular stats over time of what kind of audience you have in front of your screen over time. And I think that is a much better description versus just a normal audit that we see being done today.
Yeah. I would also think no matter how much data you put into these sorts of things, even if you have real-time data available very quickly, it would be way more complicated to program and feed the data into all that and make it all happen than typical media buyers ever going to want to do.
Yeah, I mean, and at some point, it's standards too. You know, one thing that I remind a lot of our sellers on is, you know, the Vistar demand that's coming in. Because a lot of people will say, well, hey, I'm going to put cameras everywhere. Is that going to increase my CPM, increase my rate, essentially, that I'm selling at? Is this going to help me make more money? And my answer is, it might, and especially in your direct sales effort. However, from a mass scale programmatic perspective, it doesn't really help because, you know, 1 out of 10 media owners having this technology and the rest not having it, I can't, you know, say to marketers, hey, 1 out of 10 of my networks has this really great thing for measurement. The rest of it's not that good. Buy this, but don't buy that. You know, it's not a good thing for my business or my partner's businesses to go down that path. So we have to kind of sit in the middle and play with everyone. And we of course have our opinions about things and what's good and what's bad. But we can't say that, you know, oh, the past is the past and this was done in a poor way. This, you know, computer vision's a solution, let's say, and everyone go down this path. We're just not in the position to make that assertion.
I seem to remember that 8-10 years ago, you know, when you were starting to bubble up, that the general feeling was that the only way programmatic and demand side buying was going to happen was if it was on the big holding company's own platforms. They weren't going to use third-party ones. And if you were going to have a win somehow or other, you had to become the platform of choice for, whatever giant agency you want to name. But you're kind of saying that that buyers are now using any number of platforms, or they have their kind of roster of ones that they go to.
Yeah, and this has evolved a lot, I think, over the last few years. One of the things that we realize with a lot of the large holding companies and the trading groups within them is they want best of breed technology. That's kind of where they landed on it. There was definitely a time period where they said, I want one system to log into for everything. And Google's the one, right, kind of thing. But people are realizing that there's a lot of independent companies that have done such a great job of just maybe building better software or having better access to inventory that they elect for these. I mean, if you look in the public markets, the Trade Desk, TTD, is their ticker. I mean, their success is fully built around that concept that there's more than just logging into Google. There's more than even logging into an Amazon or Facebook. Like, having an independent company who's good at specific things is valuable. And we even saw that with mobile most recently. So a lot of the trading desks that we work with, they still use a point solution for mobile buying that's disconnected from some of their desktop display and video buying. We're seeing a bit of that merge now because the DSPs that were doing display and video got really good at mobile. So it's not a question of, I just want it to be in one system because that's what I want. It's actually because these companies like the Trade Desk have built great mobile solutions now. And so what we found with out of home, given that we were early on, I mean, we still today have the best solution for programmatically buying out of home. And it's probably because we've been doing it for 8 years. It's not that surprising. But that's why we're able to get some of these large holding companies to commit to us from the out of home perspective. And I think that will continue for a good amount of time. You know, a lot of the large DSPs out there who are also our partners and they plug into our supply as well. A lot of them, out of home is becoming a priority. It's an exciting new channel for them, but they still have connected TV and radio, programmatic audio, that usually is taking priority, honestly, over out of home. And so a lot of those companies are very focused on TV right now. So I think we'll see the same kind of thing over time happen. But I think it's probably 5 years plus out.
So last question, what are we going to see out of Vistar in the next 6 to 12 months?
Yeah, that's a great question. On the
think of something.
Yeah, right. We'll
see. I don't
know. I have to watch out because then all the employees will listen and then be like, "We're doing what?"
Mass layoffs.
Yeah, God, no, definitely not that. It's probably the opposite. It's too much hiring. Honestly, is usually the thing. You know, I think everyone can look out for some big announcements around suppliers that we've onboarded. And not only just onboarded onto our SSP, but also onto Cortex. We're going to be making some big announcements around that. We've got some interesting hires coming up that should be announced soon as well. I think that the big takeaway is the growth of the programmatic out-of-home space. As I had mentioned earlier, we were thinking it's nearly 120 in the U.S. alone. We're investing heavily globally as well. So we launched Canada 2 years ago, which has been an extremely successful market for us. We launched the UK and Australia last year, and then we've got a handful of other markets that we're going to be entering later this year and early next year. And so from my perspective, the growth rate of out-of-home and keeping that rate or even speeding it up is probably the number one thing to kind of look for from Vistar. Is we're going to be firing on all cylinders on the buy and the sell side to make this industry a larger portion of the overall advertising spend.
All right, Mike, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.